So thanks for the introduction. This is the title of my talk, Teaching Task-Based Parallel Programming with a Runtime Systems Aware Perspective. And this is the outline. So the graph you see over here, it's a very well-known program, which is known as unbalanced tree search. So the tree is unbalanced, and it represents depth first operation, search or traversal, any kind of such operation, but doing a depth first. So since the tree is very unbalanced, it's difficult to divide the problem size equally among multi-threaded program. So if we use the traditional multi-threaded approach, it's very difficult to divide the problem size equally because the tree is unbalanced. So the optimal way to approach the parallelization of such kind of program is by using task-based parallelism. So the pseudocode for depth first traversal for this graph, what you see is represented over here. Using task-based parallel programming model, where finish specifies the synchronization across all the tasks. So the end finish scope, which you see over here, it means, this portion. So it represents that the program should continue further only when all the tasks created inside this finish scope has terminated. So async represents a task, and if you can notice, it's a recursive. So recursively, asyncs could get created, and even the finish is also recursive, but not in this pseudocode over here. But yes, you can nest both async and finish. So here, what happens? The user is responsible to create the task, but not have to worry about how the tasks are mapped onto the threads in the background. So then how to ensure that there is a proper mapping of tasks to the thread? So that's taken care by the use of a underlying work-stealing runtime system. So the picture represents over there for a system where it's three core or three threads are there. Each thread is mapped to an individual core of the multi-core. Now, every thread has its own private deck. A deck is a data structure to store the task created by the victim. Victim is the thread who is creating the task. So any worker who is creating an async is called a victim, and any worker who is stealing an async because it doesn't have a task is called a thief. So the program flows like this. So the first worker zero or worker one in this picture will start this execution and create the first async. So the async, what it creates is pushed from the LIFO end, last in first out order, from the tail end, which is known as in the deck. Now any more asyncs what this worker would be creating, and it would be creating because it's a recursive task, right? So it would get pushed on from the same tail end. Now, in the meantime, the worker 2 and worker 3 in this picture, they are idle and they don't have anything to execute. So what they do, they start attempting to find a victim. A victim is the worker who has a task on its deck. So although there are 3 workers here, but only worker 1 has a task on its deck. So let's say worker 2 attempts to randomly find a victim. It finds that W1 is a random victim, what it has choosing in this time slice. So it would attempt to steal, and the steal would be successful, and the steal is taken care of from the FIFO end, the first in first out, which is known as the head end of the deck. So the steal is successful, and so W3 is the worker who is the thief and attempted a random steal in this session. So it would get a task and it would start executing the task. Since the asyncs are recursive, so it would also become a victim from now onwards, because it is also going to create more and more asyncs hereafter. So then it would also start pushing tasks from the LIFO end or from the tail end on its own deck, but not on the deck of other worker. It's private to it, it's each worker. Now, we have 2 victims, W1 and W3, but W2 is a thief because it doesn't have any task to execute. So it also becomes a thief now and attempts to find a random victim. Let's suppose that it identifies W3 is the random victim ID. It attempts to do an steal from the same W3 in the same function, in the same order, that is from the FIFO end or the head end, and again it also becomes a victim. Finally, the tasks are distributed across all the worker, and the system continues executing the task by doing a mapping between the task and the threads. And in this way, the user doesn't have to bother about what is the optimal mapping of the task to the thread. So it's taken care of by the runtime itself. So it's a very well-known approach, and there are many courses on this approach. But currently the problems or the places where the current implementation of courses fall is, where do we have the opportunity to optimize such an implementation, knowing that the processor design is now being changing very very frequently, right? For example, some of the issues over here are as follows. Now here in this graph, the task, as you can see, is the generation of an each and every node in this tree. But what should be the optimal granularity? It could be that the number of threads are like very minuscule, 4, 10, 12, something like that, but the tasks are being generated in the order of millions of tasks. So every task generation is an overhead because it has associated memory footprint to it. Now the task also are being pushed onto the deck. So here the synchronization primitives are also being executed to ensure the consistency of the task. So now as and when we use more and more synchronization primitives, the overheads are also increased, right? So we have the overheads from the task creation, that is how many tasks are getting created, how many tasks are being pushed in the deck and being stolen from the deck. Likewise, if we want to execute such a problem on a non-uniform memory access architecture, then how do we ensure the memory locality? So these are some of the issues where the current courses are currently falling short, and the course which we are running at IIIT Delhi focuses on these shortcomings. Okay, so these are the three modules on which we focus. The first one is about how to tackle the runtime overheads. As I mentioned, the runtime overheads can arise from several situations. First, obvious ones are the how many tasks should be created. Now, it could be that one system the user can create 10,000 tasks because the number of cores are high, and whereas the other system the number of cores are maybe smaller than the first system, so the number of tasks could be fewer than what it created on the bigger system where the number of cores are more, right? So there is a problem because the user has to now worry or do an implementation or an evaluation to find the optimal task size, but it's an overhead for the user. It's not a scalable approach. So we solve this problem. There are many papers in this area, and there the runtime is modified to take care of the optimal number of task creation. Likewise, also about the optimal implementation of the data structure, because as and when we keep on running the synchronization primitives on the deck, overheads would get added to it. So these are some of the runtime overheads. Also how to scale on the non-uniform memory access architecture so that the task and the data are co-located. It could be the task is running on a thread which is on the first NUMA domain and the data for the task is on the second NUMA domain. But it would lead to loss of locality. So the task and the data both should be on the same NUMA domain. So that's also being taken care of by the runtime, and there are many papers on this area. The second module is about the concurrency issues. Now, although I told about the task creation, but we can also have the user level threads mimic as a sort of task, where the user level thread is mapped to the kernel thread, but the issue could be related to the memory overhead associated to it or the scalability. Now, how to do the debugging of such an approach? Because we create the task and the task is free to be executed by any worker. Now, if you have to run the replay of the task, then how to do that? So these are something related to debugging. We focus on this in the second module of the course. And then, of course, the modern challenges with the scalability is about the energy. One important dimension is the energy efficiency of such a system. So how to optimize the energy without losing much in time, right? So these are some of the things which we tackle in the module 3. Also how to enable resiliency, and also how to scale the implementation of such a work stealing runtime on a heterogeneous system. For example, you could have a iterative for loop which works on data, but the for loop can be recursively distributed among the workers, and some of the workers are on the multi-core, but some of the workers are on the GPUs. So the so simultaneously we are distributing the task to be run both across the CPU and GPU. So this is also about improving the energy efficiency and making use of the available hardware, right? So these are some of the efficient strategies which we cover in module 3. So the contributions of this talk or the paper, the course are as follows. So the title of the course is Parallel Runtimes for Modern Processors. So it differs from the existing approaches or the existing courses on this area because it focuses more on the runtime techniques rather than on the front end. Front end is about the creation of tasks and the back end is about the mapping of tasks to the thread in an optimal manner. Now it's being offered at IIIT Delhi from past 3 years. So this, right. So it emphasizes both on productivity and performance. It's a very programming intensive course. And we present the summary of the past 3 offerings. So these are the lecture topics. We first start the course by covering the fundamental, that is, what is an async finish implementation, what is a work stealing implementation, how to do a mapping. So these cover the fundamental. Then the module 1, which I just explained, module 1 to 3, covers the major chunk of the course. And then finally, we end the course with a set of research seminar, 3 seminars, where the student present a summary of a research paper. I'll talk more on that in the further slide. So the evaluation component is like 50% proctored and 50% take home assignment. So assignment in the sense of a project. So 10% quizzes and 20% mid-sem, 30% end-sem, and 50% is the project component. Now the one important approach taken in this course is the project, and the project has the milestones which are chained with each other. The output of one of the milestone is going to be the input for the second milestone, so that by the end of the course, the student has built a very significant large system on its own, right? So the milestone 1 is the design and implementation of an async finish runtime. So the async finish task based approaching parallel programming model is created by the student, and he also implements the work stealing runtime and ensures there is a proper mapping of tasks to the threads. And the implementation of such a task-based parallel programming model, that becomes a milestone 1. It becomes the input for milestone 2, which is about the minimizing the task creation overhead, that is the granularity and the optimal data structure. The milestone 3 is about scaling this milestone 2 on a non-uniform memory access architecture. Milestone 4 is about the ensuring there's a locality using trace and replay. And milestone 4-5, which is about implementing the energy efficient strategies in this implementation. And finally, milestone 6 is about evaluation of all the milestone on HPC server, and also presenting it in the form of a presentation along with a summary of a recently published research paper. So the student and marks distribution are as follows. So roughly 50% of the students are more, right, I think it's the number of student, not the percentage, but the majority of the students are UG undergraduate than the postgraduate. And the marks distribution is 50% project and the 50% proctored, out of which the students obtained marks in this order. The marks obtained in the project are much more than in the proctored, because the proctored exams are where they have to write in front of the instructor, whereas this one they can get to do in home, and they often take help of the LLM tools nowadays, right? So they get more marks in that component. So the challenges and the lessons learned, since we have a project implementation, which is the huge component of the course, we covered the core lectures associated with the milestones ahead on, like before the mid-semester. Now that is one thing we have learned. Then we also started this course where we allowed the student to build their runtimes on an Argo bot implementation. It's a user level thread implementation. Now, but the student faced challenges with that. So we asked the student nowadays to implement it on a custom work stealing runtime, which is the milestone 1. Now, since we cover most of the lecture, which is mapped to the project deliverable before the mid semester, the lectures after the mid semester are dangling, in the sense they don't have any non-proctored component. So adding a lab for that would be helpful. And students nowadays started using AI tools. So roughly 8% of our, so we did a survey where we found that 8% of the students reported that they have used LLM tools in more than 25% of their submission. But it's a small number, right? But still it's a challenge what we are facing, and the milestone in a way helps in addressing that challenges. Now this is the summary of my talk. So this talk presents the implementation of a parallel runtime based course. So it's being offered at IIIT Delhi from past 3 years. It focuses on both on productivity and performance, but emphasizes more on performance than the productivity. And it uses a project-oriented course design where the deliverables are very programming intensive, and student by the end of the course have the feel of building a large-scale system. So that's it. Thank you.
I would like to invite the speakers of the first session to come back in the front for a panel session. And if you are in the audience digitally, if you ask question in the chat, I will try to relay the questions that make sense to the speakers. I think there is only one mic because I think we're gonna have to run one. So. Any questions from the room?
Thank you. Hello. My question is for Lena primarily, but I would welcome answers from the entire panel, which is about encouraging students to think about data types being one of the challenges. And in C, that comes quite naturally. Python comes less naturally. But I'm aware that Python has implemented some type hints. And so I'm curious if in earlier programs, type hints are encouraged because they help that kind of thinking, which is so useful in HPC programming specifically. Thought about that
in the curriculum? Yes, as I thought. So in this class, I don't know what kind of experience you have before. In the NumPy class I'm designing, I'm also using in another programming class, which is called Scientific Programming in Python, where I encourage people and try to teach them efficient Python programming. I do this because I think it's very important, and I also teach them especially that if they use a predefined function, they have to check what they do use internally, because this is also something that people often fall above, that they internally use double position and it does not make change anything if they call it within another data type. So yeah.
Any other questions?
Thank you. My question is for Vivek. I was wondering when you were preparing the courses if the project-based curriculum includes a collaborative piece? Do students have to work with each other, or is it individual projects?
I forgot to mention about it. So it's a pair programming based implementation. So the student work in a pair, and we have limited the group size to two. And that's very useful because it encourages a student to cheat among themselves in a group of two rather than cheating from somewhere else. And in that way, you know, they are safe from that perspective. So it minimizes the chance of plagiarism. And they also get a chance to work in a pair, which is they collaborate. So it also helps them in building a collaborative strategies.
Thank you. Actually, I have a question for Eric. I was wondering, in your agent tutoring system, you mentioned that right now the system is too slow and makes the system feel clunky. I was wondering whether you have any thought on how fast you would need the system to be for enabling a better student experience.
In experimenting with some of these inference engines, you know, I've seen even these really large models, if they have the muscle behind them, the right GPUs set up for inferencing, that it can be, you know, just a second or less, between 1 and 2 seconds, you know, so it just feels like a much more natural conversational flow at that point. That would be my goal.
Sort of continuation of this question, what hardware required?
So running the 27 billion parameter of the Gemma 3, we sharded it across 4 A100s on a node of the Polaris supercomputer. There are smaller parameter models, I think, that would, you know, be much more reasonable than having to expect, you know, 4 leadership class GPUs, you know, but that's what we used. For our evaluation, we'd like to scale down. With that model, I mean, you can use a much smaller version of the Gemma 3. We just chose that one primarily for the fidelity of its outputs. It was producing the highest quality outputs. You know, we wanted to, while we got this thing prototyped, we wanted to, you know, just stick with that, and we weren't really focused on portability at that point. But
so it's speedless adaptive. So it's just the size of one.
Yes, comes down to VRAM stuff. So, yeah, exactly.
Thanks. My question is also for Eric. So I'm fairly steeped in the carpentry's world, the carpentry's education world, where which kind of addresses, feels like it kind of rhymes, right? So we have highly interactive workshop-based lesson presentations. Of course, we don't have any kind of solution for the scaling problem in the carpentries world. But one of the things that the carpentries world is able to do because of the interactivity is continuous self-improvement of the curriculum. You get a feedback opportunity because of the sort of more intimate nature. Do you have anything like that in your model?
Currently, we're not doing anything like reinforcement learning with human feedback. You know, we've definitely talked about it in some, you know, version 2, 3, something like that. Right now, it does not use that, but I would love to explore that route at some point.
So I did have a question for Nina about that online classes. Do students actually interact at all throughout that online class? And I was wondering if you noticed that the split in the language that they use actually splinter the cohort experience?
So they work together, so I built groups at the beginning, and they solve together, and I built the groups based on the language. So I asked them before, that's also one of the reasons. And how they cooperate is we have the Discord server for our students, we have a shared Jupyter lab where they can also interact with each other. It's very difficult, it's not solved 100% how to do this. We give also another things like lectures in Git, and so how to work cooperatively. And I think the language question was it, so I make sure that the same language work together, and if it does not work, I ask them if it's okay for them to work in two different programming language, and usually it works out.
Thank you.
So I have a question for that. So you didn't talk really about the programming language or this is a graduate class that you're talking about?
Sorry, can you please repeat the last part?
So it's a graduate class. You didn't say sort of the level of students that were taking that class. It seemed pretty advanced.
Right, so we have a mix of both undergraduate and postgraduate student, that is the masters and the PhDs in the postgraduate part. But the major chunk are the undergraduate student. So like I think 70% would be the undergrad, rest 30% would be the PG postgraduate student. And the student use C, C++ based programming model.
But those constructs are not standard, that's a library?
Yes, it's a library based approach. So the C++ 11 has the Lambda functions. So we use the Lambda functions over there. So we don't need a compiler for translation. It's all library-based implementation.
This will be way to probably have a campaign as well, because it's with the project, even though it's two people, I'm just thinking in the future, maybe it becomes more people. Is there anything in the evaluative process that helps you distinguish individual contributions? Or I did see something on TeamSpirit. Is it a collective responsibility, or is there some mechanism for individual contributions, and how do you go about that?
So for every milestone, the student are supposed to declare the total contribution of, like, individual contribution from each of the student. And we take a small Viva during the demo also, to see if they really understand to which they claim that they have contributed to the project. But beyond that, we haven't attempted to see how to truly find out what is the individual contribution, because it's often vague, the student, and it's always not the case that there is going to be equal, truly equal contribution from both the student. So usually one of them is the leading student and the other one is not doing much. But this is the way we approach this problem, with a demo and asking them to identify or declare what is the percentage and what are the individual contribution from each other.
So the interaction is human.
Yes.
And
yes.
That's why I asked if Eric wanted to weigh in as well, because in matters of scale, is there anything that is around the corner that could be used?
So to find out more about, you know, if they really understood the problem or that if they really contributed to what they said they have contributed, we can include lab, which is not currently, is not the part of the course. But once we have the lab, it's going to be proctored. And we can map the lab to some of the components in the project so that we can truly justify if they're able to understand or they claim something which they haven't contributed to. So that's a future work. We haven't tried to do that.